offering a most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, welcoming you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. And as Bishu said, we have today in our studios to join me, Brother Hari Shankar from the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. Dear listeners, you will be aware that we are going through the 1990 Summer Course series. We've gone through 9 discourses so far. This is the 10th one in that series. We're beginning a new discourse this week. But before we go into the discourse, before we talk about what Swami is here, the topic which Swami is going to talk to us today about, I, on behalf of all of you, welcome Brother Hari Shankar. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Prem. Thank you for having me on.
I don't know what to say about this discourse, because one pattern which we have noticed in this series of discourses is Swami is going subtler and subtler.
Yes.
You know, he began with culture, which is more or less related to community living.
Right.
Then he went on to an individual, then from the body, the senses, to there, to the mind.
Yes.
Then the different aspects of the mind, the buddhi, chitta and all the others. And then ahankara.
Yeah.
That's the subtlest so far.
Yes.
And now Swami has gone into gunas. And so in that pattern, this is definitely one of the more subtler and more complex of all we've gone through so far.
Yeah, pretty much the building block of everything that he has spoken so far. So
right.
Gunas, as in Indian system of philosophy, represents the building blocks of...
Right. I think maybe it wouldn't be out of place to begin with a brief introduction of what is this concept of gunas in Indian understanding, because though we use it so often, it's of course attribute is the closest maybe translation in English we could find, but I think it's much more varied in meaning than that.
Yes, one of the translation of gunas would be in terms of tendencies, like as in forces. Like,
okay,
so as I said, it is a building block of creation, and creation involves movement. So or change or evolution.
Right.
So it these are the forces of literally of evolution or change or creation. So that is to say, so sattva, it represents peace or equilibrium. So when we are talking in the context of, let's say, creation or nature, so sattva represents the aspect of equilibrium or peace. You know, when we come to rajas, it's the aspect of excitation, so of quick movement, you know. And when it comes to tamas, it is regarded as a retarding force, as a retardant or sloth
or
inertia.
Right.
Yeah. So that is how the gunas are talked about. But in fact, if you really look at the entire series of discourses, Swami is actually elaborating on a system of philosophy, which is called the Sankhya philosophy.
Okay.
So this, as do almost all systems of philosophy in India, all of them have their basis in the Vedas and the Upanishads.
Right.
So especially when you look at this particular system of philosophy, we find its origins in the primary Upanishads, Shvetashvatara Upanishad and the Chandogya Upanishad.
Okay.
So that is where the first, beginnings of this kind of discussion or this kind of model of what this universe is, what is the individual,
right,
that
the
is
the secret behind creation, or something like how this whole thing has come to be.
Yeah, it kind of explains like what is creation, or what are you and I made up of in the first place, like how are we here, what is our purpose in this universe. The entire philosophy is directed towards like like establishing how we got created, what are we to do in this world, what is our final purpose. And about the purpose, they're pretty clear. It is like going back to our source, the divine origin of all of us. But it also details like how do we really, what is the method to go back for the jiva to go back to that particular origin. So, to elaborate a little more on what this philosophy is, how does it look at the world, how does it look at creation? So here, there are two aspects. Called Purusha and Prakriti.
Okay.
So Purusha is that what we know as the undifferentiated consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It is pure, untainted, and it is the most important thing is unmanifest. It remains as the potential.
Okay.
And then you have something called Prakriti. And Prakriti is what Swami has been talking about so far. It is the unconscious aspect. It is the Chitta, Mano, Buddhi, Ahankara, the senses, So all of these represent the unconscious nature, prakriti. So now what the system of philosophy states is that this prakriti, it remains as it is, unexpressed, when all the three gunas are in equilibrium. And then when Purusha actually enters, enters into this prakriti, is when prakriti actually now becomes manifested. Like what we call the jiva, is actually when Purusha enters into prakriti and creates the entire world. So the manifest world is when Purusha and prakriti come together. One interpretation of the idol Nataraja, as they say,
right,
the dance of creation.
Right.
And so Shiva and Parvati, when they dance, this is the Tandava dance, it is representative of this aspect of creation. That Purusha and Prakriti, they come together, and that's how the dance of this world, of this universe happens.
Right. And you know, having had that introduction, it puts a lot of things in perspective. Because
yes,
you know, when Swami spoke about Ahankara and Swami spoke about Buddhi, you know, even for that matter, when he spoke about the body and the senses, the emphasis was always on how to use these instruments to go to a level which is deeper.
Absolutely.
To use these to, you know, gravitate towards the goal of life.
Yes.
And when Swami came to Buddhi, Swami said, Buddhi is that discriminating tool which is given to you, which actually decides that, yes, I need to take this path.
Yes.
And then Swami said, that which actually may stall this progress would be the Ahankara. And then Swami spoke about Ahankara. But you know, when you go through all this, definitely at some point you get the question that how did this separation happen, first of all? And I think as an answer to that is the three gunas.
Yes.
Swami says this is how the creation came to be. This is how the separation came to be. This is how the Purusha or the unmanifest has manifest in the form of creation.
We'll be seeing in the discourse, or we'll be listening to the discourse, and you'll see like how Swami explains that the entire creation is just a play of the three gunas. So,
right, right.
So
it is, I think, from what you've said, one thing is human attributes could also be defined as gunas. You know, some person could be called sattvic, some people may be termed as tamasic. It is, I remember when there was a presentation on the three gunas in our class, in the awareness class, we came up with this idea where we took a fan and we put different colors on the blades of the fan.
Right.
And we started, we switched on the fan. And so we would ask the class, you know, what is the color you see?
Right.
So they would say that, you know, there's a green color, there was a red color. When we switch off the fan, we would show that actually it had all the three colors.
Three colors, yeah.
It's just that one color which is predominant, and when you looked at the fan which was moving, you said this is the color which is there.
Yeah.
So we said this is what happens when we look at people.
Yes.
It's not that they're bereft of the other gunas,
yes,
but the predominant guna is what you associate that person with.
Yes. This is very similar actually to the model of creation which is spoken about in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad.
Is
what
it?
I just described
is
pretty similar to a visualization. So they visualize a god or creation in terms of a wheel.
Okay.
And this wheel has these, you know, these three parts, and then they divide into many spokes. It's a very complex thing, but basic structure, what you described is similar to what is mentioned in that Upanishad. Yeah.
So that's one thing. One thing is to go by the attributes of people whom you see.
Yeah.
And that is also termed as gunas. Gunas also mean character. And, you know, that's another definition of the Sanskrit word guna.
Yes.
Somebody's character, you say.
Yes.
So that is basically, you could say that he's either pious.
Yeah.
Or he is vibrant and active,
yes,
or he's lethargic or lazy. But also the other definition is these are the basic qualities which were created before creation came by.
Absolutely.
You know, these were the ripples by which, you know, the final separation as we see it, you know, as individuals, has come by.
Yeah, that's why the one of the words they use is tendencies.
So tendencies, right.
More than characteristics, like it's a play, you know, all the three gunas, they come by. So everything that we see is not just applicable to people, anything, any aspect of creation, in fact.
Right, right.
So like, very, very complex way of describing, like the element called earth, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So later in the discourse, Swami will talk about how earth is created by the gunas. But this is not the earth that we speak about. So further, these five elements, they combine to form earth in very varying proportions. They combine and form the earth that we know, that what we live on. So that is at the very basic is the gunas. So the gunas, they combine in very different ways and they form the elements. The elements again, they combine in very different ways and they form the substances that we see around us.
So I think, and that for an intro, we'll go into the discourse. Yes. We'll listen to what Swami has to say, and definitely Swami will have the best way of putting it. So precisely. We'll listen to Swami and let's see if we could summarize what Swami is saying in that discourse clip.
Yeah.
Bhaskar Bindi Deeptam Daivam Bhaskar Bindi Deeptam Daivam Lochanamadya Chuptam Daivam Sitakar Mandala Guptam Daivam Sitakar Mandala Guptam Daivam Trigunita Bhavanam Vyaptam Daivam Trigunita Bhavanam Vyaptam Daivam Bhaskara Bimbe Deeptam Daivam Bhaskara Bimbe Deeptam Daivam Lochanamadya Suptam Daivam Sitakara Mandala Guptam Daivam 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 Sitakara Mandala Guptam Daivam Trigunita Bhavanam Vyaptam Daivam Trigunita Bhavanam Vyaptam Daivam 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 Prema Swarupulaina Vidyarthulara Students, embodiments of divine love. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Vishvam Vishnu Swarupam.
The entire universe is the very form of Vishnu and God is found everywhere.
Bhaskara Bimbe Deeptam Daivam. Suni Yokka Kiranamala Yokka Mundu Prakashinchetuvanti Vadu ప్రకటించేటువంటి వాడు దైవమే.
గాడ్ ఇస్ ద వన్ హూ షైన్స్ అండ్ డిక్లర్స్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ ఇన్ ద రేస్ ఆఫ్ సన్.
లోచన మధ్య సుప్తం దైవం. ప్రతి మానవుని యొక్క నేత్రముల మధ్య జగత్తును చూపించి ప్రకటింపజేసి వికసింపజేసి ప్రకాశింపజేసేటువంటి వాడు దైవం.
గాడ్ ఇస్ ద వన్ హూ మేక్స్ ద ఐ ఫంక్షన్ అండ్ సీ అండ్ ఎంజాయ్ ది మేనిఫెస్టెడ్ ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ అండ్ దట్ ఇస్ ద వరల్డ్.
చితకర మండల గుప్తం దైవం. చంద్రుని మధ్య ఉన్నటువంటి యొక్క చల్లదనము తెల్లదనము లోక శాంతిని అందించేటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యత్వము దైవమే.
ద కూల్నెస్ ద వైట్నెస్ అండ్ ద ఇమెన్స్ పీస్ విచ్ మూన్ కన్ఫర్స్ ఆన్ ద వరల్డ్ ఈజ్ ఆల్సో గాడ్.
త్రిగుణిత భవన వ్యాప్తం దైవం. త్రికాలాత్మకమైనటువంటి ఈ జగత్తునందు త్రిమూర్తాత్మకమైనటువంటి ఈ జగత్తునందు త్రిగుణ స్వరూపములో ప్రకటించేటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యత్వం భగవంతమే.
దిస్ వరల్డ్ విచ్ కన్సిస్ట్ ఆఫ్ త్రీ టైమ్స్ పాస్ట్ ప్రజెంట్ అండ్ ఫ్యూచర్ అండ్ త్రీ మూర్తిస్ ట్రినిటీ ఇట్ ఈస్ గాడ్ హూ ఎక్స్ప్రెసెస్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ ఇన్ ద ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ త్రీ క్వాలిటీస్.
ప్రకృతి యొక్క చిత్రము మహావిచిత్రము.
The nature of creation is rather wonderful.
ఎవ్వరూ దీనిని గుర్తించలేరు.
No one can realize this.
ముంచిన, తేల్చిన, అనుగ్రహించిన, ఆగ్రహించిన ప్రకృతి.
It is the nature which can give you, confer on you grace, or which can show its own anger, which can confer everything on the man.
జీవకోటి పైన ఆధిపత్యం ప్రకృతిది.
Nature exercises its own mastery over man.
ఈ ప్రకృతి త్రిగుణాత్మకమైనటువంటిది.
This nature and creation consists of three qualities.
ఈ త్రిగుణాత్మకమైనటువంటి ప్రపంచమే త్రిమూర్తి స్వరూపం.
This world which consists of three qualities is also the form of Trinity.
ఇవియే సృష్టి స్థితి లయమునకు త్రిగుణములే మూల కారణం.
For the creation, sustenance and dissolution, it is these three qualities which are responsible.
త్రిగుణముల యొక్క స్వరూప స్వభావాలతో
the form and the nature of these three qualities,
విశేష వికారాలతో
the special features and the way that they function,
సరస సల్లాపాలతో
the joy and the sorrow they are capable of conferring,
లోకాలను ప్రకాశించేటువంటిది ప్రకటింపజేసేటువంటిది త్రిగుణం.
It is these three very qualities which fill the world with all these things and which make the creation express itself in all this variety.
మానవుడు దీర్ఘ జీవితం కోసం కాదు ఆశించవలసినది, దివ్య జీవితం కోసం ఆశించాలి.
What man should aspire for is not for a long life, but for divine life.
దివ్యమైనటువంటి ఈ ప్రకృతి యందు దివ్యమైనటువంటి మానవత్వము దివ్యత్వాన్ని పొందటమే ప్రధాన కర్తవ్యం.
The most important duty of humanity is to see that they become divine as they are living in the divine nature.
సృష్టి యొక్క రహస్యము సృష్టికర్తకు తప్ప అన్యులకు అర్థం కాదు.
The secret of creation is known to the creator alone, to none else.
సృష్టి యొక్క రహస్యమును గుర్తించడానికి ప్రయత్నించేటువంటి వారే ఈ సైంటిస్ట్.
ద సైంటిస్ట్ ఆర్ దోస్ హూ ట్రై టు అండర్స్టాండ్ ద సీక్రెట్స్ ఆఫ్ నేచర్.
ఈ సృష్టి యొక్క రహస్యమును కూడాను పరిపూర్ణంగా ఎవరు కూడాను గుర్తించలేరు.
నో పర్సన్ వుడ్ బి ఏబుల్ టు అండర్స్టాండ్ ద సీక్రెట్స్ అండ్ ది మిస్టరీ ఆఫ్ నేచర్ ఇన్ ఆల్ ఇట్స్ ఫుల్నెస్.
ఈ వైజ్ఞానమునందు ఈనాటి పరిశోధన రేపటికి పాతదైపోతుంది.
In science, today's research becomes outdated tomorrow.
రేపటి దినము యొక్క పరిశీలన ఎల్లుండికి పాతదైపోతుంది.
And tomorrow's research get exploded.
కానీ ఈ వైజ్ఞానిక వ్యక్తి యందు పాతదంతా రోతదిగా భావించుకుంటూ పోతుంటాడు.
In the science, what happens is everything old is considered as out of fashion.
కనుక సృష్టి అంతా కూడాను కేవలము క్షణ క్షణములకు మార్పు చెందినటువంటిది.
సృష్టి ది క్రియేషన్ అండర్గోస్ కంటిన్యూస్ చేంజ్.
ఇది నిత్యమైనది సత్యమైనటువంటిది కాదు.
దిస్ ఇస్ నాట్ పర్మనెంట్ అండ్ దిస్ ఇస్ నాట్ ఎటర్నల్.
నిత్య సత్య నిర్మలమైనటువంటి యొక్క తత్వము సృష్టికర్తనే.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది క్రియేటర్ హూ ఈస్ పర్మనెంట్, హూ ఈస్ ఎటర్నల్ అండ్ హూ ఈస్ ట్రూత్.
సృష్టికర్తను పరిశీలన చేసి పరిశోధన చేసి సృష్టికర్తను పొందేటువంటిదే ఆధ్యాత్మిక మార్గం.
Spirituality is that path which makes you first investigate into the creator and understand the creator and then go for creation.
ఈ చరాచర ప్రపంచమంతా కూడాను కేవలం త్రిగుణాత్మకమే ఉన్నటువంటిది.
The entire world, moving and unmoving, consists of these three qualities alone.
కనుక గుణాతీతమైనటువంటి తత్వాన్ని గుర్తించేటువంటి వ్యక్తిత్వమే నిజమైనటువంటి మానవత్వం.
The real humanity consists of making an effort to understand the transcendental truth rather than the truth which is subject to the changes.
that was the first clip in that discourse. It's quite an introductory, face of that discourse, one could say.
Yeah.
Because one thing Swami is saying, that, yes, you know, just a couple of points that Swami is making there. One thing which Swami is very clearly saying is Sarvam Kaliyudham Brahma. Like everything that is, that you see, that you feel around,
yes,
you know, that you experience around you, everything is God.
Yeah.
But as we just said before playing that clip, you know, the question comes then, why that diversity?
Yes.
What is creating this difference? What is making us see these as different?
Yeah.
And Swami brings in the idea that is where, you know, the gunas come in.
Mm.
Yes, everything is God, but you see them as different. What is it that is bringing this disparity together? And that is the three gunas.
Yes. In fact, right at the very beginning, like, of course, Swami is now going to delve very deeply into what nature is, like what constitutes nature, etc. But you see, right at the beginning, he is reminding us that no matter what it is the divine that permeates everything.
Right.
Like he brings in this example. He says that it is the divine that shines in the rays of the sun and reveals the divinity through his eyes.
Right.
There is this Keno Upanishad which echoes the lines of, which reminds us of what Swami is saying. And it says, not that which the eye can see,
that which makes the eye see.
Know that to be Brahman and not what people here adore.
Right.
Likewise for all the senses, like everything is, it's not something that the senses can perceive. It is something that makes the senses perceive.
Right. It's quite understandable. I mean, just looking at it practically and, scientifically.
Yes.
If you ask somebody, how are you able to see? You might say it's because of my eye.
Yeah.
But the fact is you're able to see because of light.
Exactly, yes.
And, you know, the existence of light and giving light the ability to make objects visible to you.
Mm.
That quality of light, I mean, that is where when Swami talks about philosophy and Swami talks about spirituality and science, you know, science is dwelling up to, you know, what is making you see.
Precisely.
But spirituality is going to the point, what has given the ability of light to make objects visible to you?
Yes.
What has given quality, given light that quality? You know?
Yeah. I was just reading something a few days ago. There is this famous biologist, a geneticist. His name is Richard Dawkins. And yeah. So, you know, many years ago, he wrote a very excellent book called The Selfish Gene, which, like, basically it seeks to explain every behavior of man, everything that we do in nature, in terms of genes. So, it's called the gene-centric theory. Mm-hmm. So it has been literally this, you know, one of the standing positions of biology for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just reading the other day how some recent, you know, researchers into the behavior of certain, like, relationships between animals. They've actually been studying the genes so closely. And now they realize that that is not the correct model as to how nature behaves.
Okay.
In fact, they're more and more perplexed because earlier they thought that it is the organism which serves the genes. And now they're seeing that the relationship is so complex that sometimes the organism actually demands something from the genes and the genes express according to the need of the organism.
Okay.
So the you know, it's called epigenetic. So the surroundings, they demand a certain kind of behavior from the organism. And it is as if the organism literally commands the genes to now behave in a totally different manner. So that, you know, now the organism is able to respond to that.
So does it mean that the idea of selfish gene is that the gene uses the...
Gene is the fundamental unit and uses the
organism as a means to express itself.
But now they're saying that may not explain entirely the relationship between the organism and the gene. There are times when the organism actually causes the gene to express itself in a different way.
Okay.
So this is what I was I got reminded of when Swami was talking about this, how scientists, they have a certain way of looking at creation. And that the fact that this is not the way that we can really apprehend what is the secret of creation.
Right, right. And, you know, that is again echoed by what Swami is telling here.
Hmm.
In a sense, that, you know, what was scientific discovery today becomes obsolete tomorrow.
Absolutely.
But, you know, if you look at it, you know, thousands and thousands of seekers have poured through the Upanishads.
Yes.
But, you know, you don't find them actually obsolete or wrong.
Yes.
It is just maybe a different way of looking at the same truth.
Yes.
And when you finally reach the truth, you find that, you know, this is just a different way, just a different angle. But it is still echoing that same truth.
Yes. It's like literally like the ladder, you know, you climb different rungs of the ladder, and every time as you climb, the whole landscape looks different every single time. So it's not that the lower rungs are any less useful. Right. You needed them to climb to the higher rungs. So this is one of the things that really came out. And the other thing that Swami talks about, that again, like setting the, the setting. He's giving the setting for the entire discourse and the discussion. He's saying, what is the reason for contemplating into creation? And he's pretty clear that there is only one thing that we can learn from creation, the fact that it is always changing.
Right.
That everything in creation is mutable. It keeps transforming into something, or it either goes out of existence, comes into existence. But you must also recognize that behind all this, there is one unchanging principle. So that is what we should fix our attention on. And Swami says that is the reason for why a spiritual aspirant, he investigates nature and creation, which is the reason why Swami is actually delving into these topics in this particular discourse.
And another beautiful point which is actually connected to this, which Swami says, is he's saying aspire to live a divine life, not a long life.
Not a long life.
Yes. No, that's again a mistake which you do when you are not looking deep.
Yeah.
You're only trying to increase life expectancy. You're only trying to increase the number of years a man or woman will lead. But Swami is saying that is not important. How much of the truth are you able to comprehend in that period of time you live? That is more important than how long you are managing to live.
Yes, I actually remember our convocation. So at the time of the convocation, Swami gives a benedictory address.
Right.
And over these years, as a management student, I have read the benedictory discourses of so many such invitees at different these convocation functions of different universities, like Steve Jobs or Jeff Bezos of Amazon. So these talks, of course, are very famous and they give a lot of insight. But if you look at Swami's discourses, which he gives at the time of convocation, he has a very interesting message, which is in total contradiction to what the other benedictory addresses are like. So the other benedictory addresses, they begin by congratulating all the students and all the graduates for what degrees they've obtained, the effort that they've put in. And they give advice on how to have that degree, how to convert that degree into some success, money, and fame in life. Whereas Swami directly begins by saying that you have earned your degrees, that is great. However, I do not consider this as important at all. And he says, unless this education which you have got is translated into inquiry into the Atma, into reality, none of this is of any avail. It is a completely contradictory stand that Swami takes.
Right. No, that's what Swami expresses even in the mission statement of the university. He's saying that it is just incidental that we're giving out degrees.
Yes.
We might give you an MBA, MA or whatever it is.
Yes.
But it's just maybe the side dish,
yes.
to put it. Because Swami is saying the goal of this institute is to inspire you to go towards self-realization.
Yes.
To ask these questions which are vital for human life.
Yes.
That is the very goal of this university. And as you said, convocation is just the day when you're saying that you're equipped now. Now go and start being a seeker.
Yes.
Or rather, you should have started by then.
Then, yes.
But it's just that it's just another day.
Yes.
But it doesn't entitle you for anything except that you're equipped.
Yeah. And now, actually coming back to what the main body of this discourse is about, and Swami says that nature is primarily composed of the three gunas, that what we normally call as sattva, rajas and tamas. So Swami is saying that these are the basic building blocks. These are the forces that literally, permeate and create what nature is, what we see around us and what we are ourselves and what the jiva is composed of. And not only that, Swami says that in fact these account for the processes of creation, sustenance and dissolution. So in fact in many places we see this association that sattva is associated with the process of creation and rajas with the process of that preservation, transforming that what is created into different aspects.
Right.
And finally dissolution, which is what laya, which is associated with the tamoguna.
Destruction.
So Swami points out that all the gunas, these are what account for every phenomenon that we see around us. So, like, if you and I occur in a certain way to people, that we say that he is a person who is given to be very dynamic, or he is a person who is given to be lazy. And Swami says that at the very root of all this is the play of the gunas.
Right. And it's quite interesting, because one thing which Swami says, especially when he starts talking about nature, is he's saying it's, to say the least, nature is marvelous.
Yes.
He's saying it's, nobody has ever understood and nobody can ever understand. And it's true for anything. Any scientist would agree with that. You take a leaf, the amount of processes which happen in that baffle you. You take a fruit, you know, a fruit becoming a fruit from that stage where it's raw. It involves, I think, a few thousand biochemical reactions. You know, to do that in a lab, it would take us 3 PhDs. But every fruit and every tree is doing that. And here is Swami saying that divinity alone permeates everything, which means, you know, when you look at something like that in nature and you're filled with awe, imagine you are the one who is the source of all that.
Yes, that
you are the one which has happened, who is creating all these things around.
That is a very important point you have brought up, because as if, you know, if you really start inquiring into, okay, the whole nature is a play of gunas, and Swami is going to really elaborate as to how different aspects of nature arise from these gunas. But if we really think about, like, why should we even, you know, aspire for anything? If you start thinking about gunas and the play of gunas, you realize that you are the effect of these gunas. This is what is the first understanding that you come to, that you really don't have, I mean, you react to stimuli because you are, you have a certain play, I mean, equilibrium of gunas within
you. Right, right.
So then what you said, that in reality you are the source of it all, is what really is the basis for any sadhana that we do. That we are not merely the effect, that we can also move to being the cause. So that is a very important point, you know, when we are, otherwise there is nothing to be gained from realizing that we are the play of gunas. Is there something that we can do to, you know, change the balance of gunas that is there within us?
Right.
Is there some way that we can affect the gunas themselves? That is something that we have to inquire into.
And also from the fact that, you know, when you look at it this way, you look at people around not as people who are causing a stimuli on you, or, you know, are a source of a stimuli, but you look at them as, you also look at them as, you know, maybe if you really go in deeply into gunas, you just see them as lights from a prism. You know, it's just that same light which is just showing up in different shades. And when that comes, the effect it will have on your reactions is going to be completely different.
So true.
You know, when you look at Swami and when you observe Swami and you say that here is a personality, he's doing this, this is right, this is wrong. You say that, you know, he is speaking like this, this is harsh, this is soft, this is a loving gesture, this is a very rude gesture. But the moment you accept Swami as divinity, you say that this is God, this is Parabrahman, the way you look at every action of his is completely different.
Yes.
The effect that Swami's action now has on your perception is totally different. And bringing that to everything around you in nature, every person that you meet, is going to have a completely, you know, a paradigm shift on the way you look at the world itself.
Yes, because one of the things that we should see, like even in the Sankhya system of system of philosophy, they talk about, they say that the Purusha himself, or as far as Swami, he is beyond the gunas.
Right.
So that's the, our existence is in terms of the gunas, but there is the, what is beyond existence, what is unmanifest is has nothing to do with the gunas itself. It is beyond the three gunas. Which is why, you know, sometimes when I think about Swami, you would not see him having a certain fixed way of responding to situations at all. He, so you and I can be characterized in terms of personalities. We are literally predictable as to what we can do. Whereas with Swami, he says, love my uncertainty. And the reason is because the way Swami responds is entirely according to what is appropriate in that situation.
Right.
Whereas we tend to act according to, as we call, we are the effect of these gunas. So Swami, he has seen the truth that he is beyond the gunas. So whatever action that he does in a particular situation is actually totally appropriate to that. So in certain situations, you might see him showing what you call as compassion. Or in some situations, it might actually occur to each one of us as to why has Swami hardened his heart so much. But in every such occasion, Swami is actually demonstrating how he is totally beyond the gunas and can act as the situation, as is appropriate to the situations, totally spontaneously.
Right. In fact, you know, I remember one Swami telling to a person, he said, you know, it is God who helps the deer find grass. And the moment you hear that, you feel, oh, God is so compassionate.
Yes.
But then Swami said, remember, the same God helps the lion find the deer. And he said, this is what God actually does to you. He enters into your frame of goodness.
Mm.
He enters into your definition of sattva.
Yes.
And then he expands to that real state which is actually, you know, gunatita. That's what Swami says, that divinity is beyond gunas.
Beyond the three gunas, yeah.
And in that process, you not only understand God, but you also understand your very nature.
Yes.
Because that is the very purpose of coming to a guru or, you know, an avatar.
I remember sitting in one, during one darshan, and there was one particular devotee, I think he had been through a lot of suffering. And he suddenly, the entire hall was quiet. Everybody was just looking at Swami, who was seated, you know, in the portico, Ganesh portico. And this particular person, he started crying out. He said, Swami, save me, and all, you know, so many. He started narrating his tale of woe from far.
Okay.
And Swami just sat there so impassively. And I was really wondering, and there's one teacher, I think it was so, that expression was there of confusion on his face, because he expected that Swami will do something for that particular person. But Swami just looked on impassively, did not even turn his head. And at some point of time, like, that person was asked to quiet down, and then Swami looked at that particular teacher and he asked, what happened? So this person was still, that confusion was so evident on his face. He asked, Swami, I thought you'll do something for that person. And Swami just smiled at him and asked him a very simple question. He asked him, do you have more compassion or do I have? Yes, so that is the guru. We have that faith in the guru that he knows everything, you know, the past, present, and future. And the gunas also are supposed to represent, you know, this triumvirate of past, present, future also.
Exactly. Verily, that's what Swami is doing to us. It is that complete state of acceptance. You know, you can go through it through inquiry or devotion. The idea is that state of acceptance. When you say that, yes, whatever is, could be only, you know, a play of that same consciousness. That is the idea which you have to get to.
Yes.
You know, maybe it's through devotion or through inquiry.
Right.
So, shall we go to the next clip in that discourse?
Yes, I think, yeah, it's very important to see. I think we've sort of got the basis of what Swami is going to speak about next.
But I think it's really getting into tougher and tougher zones.
Yes.
Bhagavantudu Atma Sarupudu. God is the very embodiment of Atma. Satya Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Ani Brahmanna, Satyamanna, Anantamanna, Atmanna, Bhagavantudanna, Devudanna, Ivikanni Kevalamu, Vokka Padama Yokka Paryayamule. Truth, wisdom, infinity, divinity, all these are all synonyms. Kanuka మొట్టమొదట ఆత్మ నుండి పంచభూతములు ఆవిర్భవించాయి. ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ హావ్ టేకన్ దేర్ బర్త్ ఫ్రమ్ ఆత్మ. అయితే పంచభూతముల యందు పంచతత్వముల యొక్క తత్వాన్ని ఇముడ్చుకొని ఉంటున్నాయి. దీస్ ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ హ్యావ్ ఇంబెడెడ్ విత్ ఇన్ దెమ్సెల్వ్స్ the five important principles.
ఈ పంచభూతముల నుండి కూడాను పంచీకృతము ఆరంభమైంది.
పంచీకృత హ్యాస్ ఎమినేటెడ్ ఫ్రమ్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్.
ఈ పంచీకృత భావము నుండి ఆవిర్భవించినటువంటివే ఈ త్రిగుణములు.
దీస్ త్రీ క్వాలిటీస్ హ్యావ్ టేకన్ దేర్ బర్త్ ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ పంచీకృత.
ఈ త్రిగుణముల యొక్క ఆకారమే ఈ విశ్వము.
This world is the very form of these three qualities.
ఈ విశ్వమునందు సత్వ రజో తమో గుణములు అనేటువంటి త్రిగుణాత్మక స్వరూపము నిండి ఉంటున్నది.
This world is full of these three qualities alone, సత్వ రజ అండ్ తమ.
ఈ సత్వ సృష్టి యొక్క రహస్యాన్ని మొట్టమొదట గుర్తించాలి.
In the very first instance, we should understand the quality of సత్వ.
సత్వ సృష్టి యొక్క సమస్త యొక్క సత్యాంశమే అంతఃకరణ.
అంతఃకరణ ఈజ్ ది మేనిఫెస్టేషన్ ఆఫ్ ది కలెక్టివిటీ ఆఫ్ ది క్రియేషన్.
పంచభూతముల యొక్క సమష్టి సత్వాంశమే ఈ అంతఃకరణ.
దిస్ అంతఃకరణ ఈజ్ అన్ ఎక్స్ప్రెషన్ ఆఫ్ సత్వ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ 5 ఎలిమెంట్స్.
అయితే ఈ ఆకాశము నుండి కూడాను సప్త సృష్టి అయినటువంటి యొక్క ఇది వ్యష్టి సత్వాన్ని అనుభవిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ ఈథర్ స్కై వాట్ హాజ్ ఎమినేటెడ్ యాజ్ సాత్విక్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ క్రియేషన్ హ్యాజ్ ఎంజాయ్డ్ ఆల్వేస్ దిస్ సత్వ క్వాలిటీ ఇట్సెల్ఫ్.
ఈ పంచభూతముల్లో ఆకాశము మొదటిది.
Among the 5 elements, ether is the first one.
ఈ ఆకాశం యొక్క వ్యక్తితత్వం నుండి కూడాను శుద్ధ సత్వం అనేటువంటి యొక్క అంశం ఒకటి బయలుదేరింది.
A pure sattva has emanated from the individual aspect of this akasha or sky.
ఇదియే మానవ ఆకారమునకు ప్రథమ స్థానం.
This is the basis of the human forms in the very
manavattamulaku ee vidhamainatti amshamul yokka prabhavamu prasakti paripurnatanu prarambham kavatam.
The fullness and the sacredness of the human aspect has come from this alone.
Kanuka akasham yokka vesti sattvam nundi kudanu chevi aneetuvanti puttindi.
From the individual aspect of this ether and from sattva, this sharir has taken its birth.
The ear has taken its birth. Inka rendavu ainatundi gali, idi rendavu bhootamu panchabhootamullo.
The second element is air.
Ee gali nundi వ్యష్టి సత్వమైనటువంటి యొక్క అంశమే చర్మము.
ద ఇండివిజువలైజ్డ్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ ఎయిర్ ఈజ్ ద స్కిన్.
మూడవదైన అగ్ని.
ద థర్డ్
అగ్ని యొక్క వ్యష్టి సత్వాంశమే కన్ను.
ది ఇండివిజువలైజ్డ్ సాత్విక్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ద ఫైర్ is the eye.
నాలుగవదైనటువంటి యొక్క నీరు, దీని వ్యష్టి యొక్క సత్వాంశమే నాలుక.
ది సాత్విక్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఇండివిజువలైజ్ సాత్విక్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ వాటర్ ఈజ్ ద టంగ్.
ఐదవదైనటువంటి యొక్క భూతము కేవలము ప్రకృతి.
ద ఫిఫ్త్ ఎలిమెంట్ ఈజ్ ప్రకృతి, నేచర్.
ప్రకృతి యొక్క వ్యష్టి సత్వాంశమే ముక్కు.
ది ఇండివిజువలైజ్డ్ సాత్విక్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ నేచర్ ఈజ్ ద నోస్.
కనుక శబ్ద స్పర్శ రూప రస గంధములు అనేటువంటి యొక్క ఈ ఎలిమెంట్స్ భూతములు ఈ యొక్క ప్రథమం నందు సాత్వికమైనటువంటి యొక్క శుద్ధ సత్వం నుంచి ఆరంభమైనాయి.
దీస్ 5 aspects, the sound, the touch, the taste, the smell and the form,
aithe
all these have come
okkokka bhutamulaku vesti bhutamu kaduka aa vesti nundi aavirbhavinchinatundi ee angamulu okkokka paniki maatrame upayoginchukodaniki veelavutundi.
In individual there are these 5 senses. Each sense can be used for a specific purpose.
Aakasham yokka gunamu shabdamu.
The important characteristic of ether is sound.
Shabdamunaku chihnamu chevi.
The symbol which is associated or the
chevi kevalamu vinuta maatrame tappa anyamu erugadu.
The sense meant for hearing the sound is ear. This can hear alone and nothing else can be done by that.
Adhe vidhamugane రెండవ భూతమైనటువంటి గాలి, ఇది స్పర్శ, ఇది కేవలము చర్మము.
ది సెకండ్ ఎలిమెంట్ ఈజ్ ఏ అండ్ దట్ ఈస్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ టచ్.
ఇది స్పర్శ తప్ప ఇది శ్రవణం చేయటం వీలు కాదు.
స్కిన్ ఈజ్ మెంట్ ఫార్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సింగ్ టచ్.
దీనికి శ్రవణ శక్తి లేదు.
ఇట్ డస్ నాట్ హ్యావ్ ది పవర్ ఆఫ్ హియరింగ్.
మూడవది అగ్ని.
ది థర్డ్ వన్ ఈజ్ ఫైర్.
ఇది కన్ను. దీని అంశము
దిస్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఈజ్ ఎక్స్ప్రెస్.
ఇది చూడగలదే కానీ స్పరించలేదు.
ఐ కెన్ సీ బట్ కెనాట్ ఎంజాయ్ టచ్.
నాలుగవది నీరు. ఇది జిహ్వ నాలుక.
టంగ్ ఈజ్ ద ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ వాటర్.
నాలుక రుచి చూడగలదే కానీ వ్యక్తిని చూడలేదు.
ఇట్ కెన్ ఎంజాయ్ టేస్ట్ బట్ ఇట్ కెనాట్ సీ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ఎ పర్సన్.
ప్రకృతి యొక్క అంశము ముక్కు.
నోస్ ఈజ్ ది ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్.
ఇది వాసన చూడగలదే కానీ రుచిని చూడలేదు.
ఇట్ కెన్ స్మెల్ బట్ కెనాట్ టేస్ట్.
అయితే ఇవి అంశముల యొక్క ప్రతిబింబములు కౌట చేత ఒక్కొక్క గుణము మాత్రమే ఇది స్వీకరిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
యాజ్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ సెన్సెస్ ఆర్ ఓన్లీ ఎ రిఫ్లెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్,
అయితే సమష్టి స్వరూపమైనటువంటి పంచభూతముల యొక్క స్వరూపమే అంతఃకరణ.
బట్ అంతఃకరణ ఈజ్ ది కలెక్టివ్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్.
అంతఃకరణకు శబ్ద స్పర్శ రూప రసగంధములు అన్నింటినీ అనుభవించేటువంటి అధికారం ఉంటుంది.
అంతఃకరణ హ్యాస్ ద పవర్ టు ఎంజాయ్ ఆల్ దీస్ సౌండ్స్, టచ్, స్మెల్, ఫార్మ్ అండ్ టేస్ట్.
కనుకని అంతఃకరణ అనగా ఇవి కేవలము శబ్ద స్పర్శ రూప రసగంధాదులు జ్ఞానేంద్రియములకు మాత్రమే సంబంధించినటువంటిది.
These five aspects which are associated with antahkarana are enjoyed through inner sense organs.
Yes, that was a clip, and needless to say, I think it's quite deep. We'll just hope and try to make a few points of, giving a little bit of order of what Swami said there.
Mm.
You know, one thing which Swami is making clear is, that the play of that which is unmanifest with the gunas is what gave rise to the five elements as we see it. It's often mentioned so many times in the Vedas too.
Mm.
The akasha, the space, air, water, land, fire. And fire.
Mm.
And Swami is saying the further interaction of these gunas with these elements is what gives rise to the senses.
It evolves from that.
Right. And the interesting point that Swami is making here is, each of these senses is nothing but an expression of only the sattvic nature of these elements.
Absolutely.
It is not the other two elements.
Yes.
Like Swami is making the point here that Akasha's sattvic nature has resulted in that of the ear. Right?
Ear. Yeah.
And fire's sattvic nature has resulted in the eyes. And the sattvic nature of earth is resulted in the nose.
Nose and so on, yes.
Right. And one of the points that Swami made in the discourse about the senses is that you have to understand the nature of the senses and then you will use it only for that purpose.
Right.
And here Swami is saying how every sense has its basis only in the interaction of that element with sattva.
Sattva itself, yes.
With sattva itself.
Purity.
That's a very important point, and again goes back to what Swami says, see good, do good, be good.
Yes.
It is not that this is what you have to do for progress, but this is what it is meant for.
It began as
it began for this very purpose.
At its provenance, as you mentioned, all of these particular faculties, they have as a provenance the interaction of purity with with these particular elements. Yes.
Right.
That's a very good point that you have brought up. And then Swami goes on to say that the antahkarana, this manobuddhi, chitta, ahankara. Right. So these are the, like, these senses, they feed into this. That is the antahkarana, it integrates what receives from the sense of it.
That's again a very profound point which Swami makes, because Swami is telling each of these senses have only one functionality.
Mm.
The ear can only hear, the eye can only see. But it is this antahkarana which actually has the ability to do all these.
Right.
And that is why they are a combination of all, all the elements as well as all the sensory perceptions also.
Yes. And I was just, kind of in my mind there was a link that was forming between what was discussed in the previous program. So I was just listening to some part of that program before we came on to this. So there they were discussing music.
Right, the bhajan tutor, right.
The bhajan tutor, when it was going on, they were discussing on particular bhajan. So normally as a lay person, like I have not studied music, and to me it is a bhajan which it goes through a particular tune. And of course I have the experience of enjoying the melody in that, and the experience of devotion, etc.
And add to the lyrics and you will have a certain theme or mood which the bhajan carries also.
Yeah, it works, as you said, a particular right. mood. But as such, for me, it is just an experience. I have not really delved into what causes that music to happen, or what causes that experience, what causes that emotion to happen. Whereas as they were doing the bhajan, they were teaching the bhajan, they are also going into something called swaras, the basic units of music.
Right.
So that, I was just thinking as to why would anybody actually, you know, go and dissect music into so many parts and actually kill the, you know, whole experience of it. And then it suddenly struck to me as to what is actually going on. So when you can distinguish music into swaras, sa re gama or do re mi fa, you know, those
right,
seven
notes
of
right.
Music. So when you do that, what does it allow you to do is to now create music yourself.
Right.
Like, you know that this particular, these notes in certain combination, they have a certain melody, and that melody has a certain effect. So that is why in a very similar way, like when we inquire into these gunas, into nature as composed of the three gunas, it has the effect for us. Being able to distinguish nature into three gunas has the effect that we have an access now into as to how we can ourselves distinguish how it affects us and what we can do to improve our personality, so to speak, at a very basic level.
As you know, a philosopher once says, you know, if you look at every person who is coming to you,
yes,
let's say somebody is making you angry or somebody has the ability to incite your temper. You know, if you look at that person as somebody who's coming for that purpose of making you angry, which means you getting angry means you're losing to him.
Yeah.
Because he's able to do what he has come to do.
Yes.
The moment that thought comes in, so to not be angry is actually your victory. So the moment you understand the cause and effect and you know what is somebody is trying to, maybe those who are actually so much into music will not be swayed by the mood of the raga.
Precisely, yes.
You know, if you know that this raga is supposed to invoke this kind of feeling in you, and you know that these are the swaras which go into it, maybe you're not going to just casually be carried away with the mood of the raga.
No, in fact, musicians, of course, they totally get into that mood of the raga, but the main point is that they can create also,
right.
not merely the effect of that. They can, like as Lord Krishna says, that he is in this particular world, he inhabits the world, or inhabits the three worlds, he has no need for any particular action.
Right, right.
Like he's totally beyond that, but yet he acts. You know, it's much the same way as what you said. Like, you're very right. A musician can, you know, being aware of what is the mechanism by which this particular mood gets created, he can say, okay, I'm not affected by that. Or he can completely lose himself in the raga. But he's also aware that he can also create that particular effect.
No, that is precisely what Swami showed us, you know, in a little different note. Swami would often say, I never get angry.
Yes.
I only pretend to get angry.
Yeah.
And that is actually true. Because when Swami gets angry, you can actually see him angry. Yeah. It is not that there is no pretension in that. There is no faking that emotion.
Correct.
He really would show the signs of a person who is really, you know, conquered by temper.
Absolutely, he can generate that particular emotion.
You know, you could see Swami's eyes becoming red, and you could see that Swami's physical frame trembling. But I remember some of my seniors once narrated, you know, they had a certain event, unpleasant event, which happened, after which Swami was very unhappy with boys. Apparently, as Swami would say, pretended to be very unhappy and angry with boys. And he decided to leave Vrindavan in a huff. He just called the warden and said, I'm leaving. And then I called all these boys, and Swami was very angry, and everybody would come up to Swami and say, even Swami, very, very sorry, you forgive us. Swami would, you know, push them, and Swami was very angry. And I don't know if you're aware, when Swami leaves Vrindavan, you know, Swami would come down the steps of Trai Vrindavan.
Yes.
To the right, there would be all the students, all the boys and teachers. And to the left would be the, you know, staff from the general hospital and the other Lady Sevadal would take care of the Ramesh Hall and all of them.
Yes.
They would be to the left of Swami when Swami is coming down the stairs, and to the right will be the boys. So here is Swami turning to the right, his eyes are, you know, red, and he's shouting at boys, and he's, you know, some of them even got a thrashing, I think.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Swami was so angry, and the very next second, Swami was turning to his left, smiling at the ladies and waving bye to them.
Absolutely.
And the next second he would turn to the boys and be angry and shout at them and turn to them. And the people who were honestly not involved in the emotion which went with this episode, you know, those boys are very upset because they had somehow managed to make Swami unhappy and that was hurting them. They might not have been in a position to see this wonder which Swami was actually exhibiting there. But those who were away from that incident, they were really awed by what Swami was doing.
In fact, one of my close friends, you know, he was actually part of the students, but he used to stand a little apart for the darshan. And his eyewitness account of this, he says it was so marvelous to see Swami on one side, you know, like exhibiting so much anger, and on the other hand, you know, within a few seconds, just turning and exhibiting so much love. It was actually alternating prem. You will not believe, like Swami is able to show so much anger, and if he actually spoke to the two different sides on his right and left, nobody would have been able to put the picture together. The people on the left would not have imagined that what is going on the right, and vice versa.
Right, right. And you know, having said what you said about gunas and, you know, the analogy of the one who has known the ragas, that's what Swami exhibited. And
precisely.
I think through these discourses, what Swami is trying to tell is, you too are capable of this.
Yes.
But only thing is, you're choosing to be on the receiving end. You're
precisely.
Choosing to be in the manipulated
fantastic.
Section of
fantastic.
This one. But
yes.
Swami is saying that you can come over to the side and this is where you rightfully belong.
Yes. Prem, actually, you know, there are these certain personality development workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And people come with, you know, various, they say we have this particular weakness or that weakness and all. So there is one particular, you know, training method. Like, for example, I want to be able to transcend anger. Like, I don't want to be the effect of the violent nature or angry nature within me.
Okay.
So one very interesting way that they're able to, you know, actually take care of this is that they have people stand in front of a mirror and actually act out anger. You know, maybe they'll give you four lines of a poem. None of the words in that poem evoke any anger.
Okay.
But they'll have you recite those lines as if you're very, very, very upset. And I've actually gone through that. Mm-hmm. I was actually wondering, what is the point of this exercise? Till, you know, when I did that three or four times, at some point of time, suddenly in my mind it clicked that I can no longer be angry because I'm actually now able to see the whole process of generating that anger. At some point of time, I know I can check it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the, you know, that I had in mind. And in fact, it allows you to generate anger when you have to. Really, when you totally have to, as a teacher or as a guru, you find yourself in a situation where that is necessary and you'll not shy away from doing that.
Right. And I think all the processes which you're talking about, you know, be it devotion or be it doing good karma, is all a process by which you can remove yourself from being manipulated or being a subject in the whole process and then inquire.
Precisely.
I reminded of a short story. You know, there is this monastery where everybody is inspired to take to inquiry. Okay, so everything, you said that every smallest activity in your daily life, try to inquire.
Yes.
Why? How? You know?
Right.
So there are these two friends. There's this one friend who is sitting at the bank of the river, looking into the river and maybe inquiring about something. So this other friend of his sneaks from behind and gives him a tight slap on his back. Just a friendly slap. But it ends up to be a very, very tight slap. So the other friend of his is in pain, he's rubbing, and the guy who comes and slaps him says, did you realize, you know, where did that sound come from? Did it come from my hand or did it come from your back?
Wow.
You know, he's set himself into a process of inquiry.
Right.
And he's already, you know, kind of impressed by that thought.
Right.
You know, where does the sound come from? Is it coming from my hand or from your back?
Your back. Okay.
So the other friend tells him, it's indeed an interesting question that you're asking, but I cannot think in those lines. Because I'm feeling the pain.
Yes, yes.
So in fact, only if you remove yourself from that, you know, the pain, that feeling and or that emotion which is involved in that moment, you can actually take into a path of inquiry.
Yes. You brought up a very important point over here, which is again, like why Swami is having us inquire into these gunas. So, as we said, you know, the aspects of tamoguna. Tamoguna gives rise to sloth. And the aspect of rajoguna, it leads to the passions. You know, the passions of anger and greed, avarice, etc. So, Now we can actually see what is the effect of all the sadhanas, the various sadhanas that we do, or what Swami prescribes for all of us. So Swami prescribes, for example, Namasmarana. He says, right, contemplate on the name of the Lord. And so we do bhajans, etc. Or Swami says, do dhyana. And in every such sadhana that we do, it is the effort that we do to stop being the effect of these gunas and slowly, move towards being established in sattva.
Right.
Because as later we read, sattva is what allows the discriminative power of the mind to actually come into play. And it is at this point of time that we can start inquiring as to who we truly are. And as the philosophy states, the whole idea is that if we can fix the mind onto what lies beyond the three gunas or beyond the aspects of creation, so that is when we really become one with the entire creation.
Right. And from what Swami said here, all these things are expression of that sattva guna. And so the first step, understandably and quite logically, is to do everything on the basis of that guna.
Yes.
Before you transcend even that, because even when Swami spoke about Antakarna, Swami said the idea of purifying the Antakarna is to annihilate it.
Yes. And in fact, even as we are reading about how the origin of each one of these senses, the point that you made that they have a divine or a pure provenance, it is also echoes with what Swami says. He says, for example, Swami says, for what reason has God given you eyes? Is it for your eyes to light upon every kind of dirty scenarios that you see around? It is for you to look at with worship at the divine form of the Lord. Or what are ears given for? Is it for you to listen to gossip? And he says, no, it is for you to listen to the sweet name of the Lord.
Right.
So it's one more, occasion for us to remind ourselves as to how our lives are to be led in consonance with what Swami has said. And knowing that what is the provenance or the origin of each one of our senses, it is for us to reflect upon how we should, use these particular organs effectively.
Right. And it will definitely also help in looking at what Swami has asked us to do. As you said, Namasmarana, Seva, whatever it is.
Mm.
And also keep in mind what is the final state which Swami actually wants to lead us
to.
The
objective. Yeah.
That will actually help us do what Swami is asking us to do better. And, once maybe you could conclude with this. Anil Kumar sir was saying, in Kodaikanal, Swami had called all the students and staff who were part of Swami's entourage. And that time there was some excavation behind Sashruti which was happening for the extension of the dining hall.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami had called all these students and Swami had asked them to offer a Shramdhan, come and help in the work which is going on.
Mm-hmm.
So they would go and lift those sands and throw it on the other side, or break some rocks.
Right.
So when the work was going on, Swami just happened to walk in just to see how it was progressing. And Swami looked at Anil Kumar sir and asked, did I come and ask you to work here because I can't afford workers?
Right.
Swami asked me, you think I didn't find workers or I can't afford workers and I asked to work?
Hmm.
Swami said, sing bhajans and do. That is the very purpose for which I brought you here.
Right.
The moment you do what Swami is asking you to do with the understanding that this is where Swami is asking, leading us, it will, make that act even more appropriate and make it as it is supposed to be.
Yes. Sanctify every little karma that we do. Yes.
Right. So, thank you, Hari. And it was indeed a profound discourse. And Ashu, thank you for your company.
Yeah, I was just wondering that the students who had listened to the discourse on that day, I think it would have sent them scurrying to the library to find out what all this was about.
Definitely, yes, but as Venkatraman said when he was here, he said, it only, of all things, shows Swami's love that he's, taking the pains to explain all this to us.
Yes.
And we should offer our gratitude to Swami for that. So, dear listeners, this brings us to the end of this week's episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. I thank Brother Harishankar on behalf of all of you. And in a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu with the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, thanking all of you for your company and thanking Bhagwan for this opportunity. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.